Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1135, Lyme Disease and Biological Warfare, Part 1. This is being recorded on June 22nd of the year 2020. Well, as the title of the program obviously indicates, we're going to be talking in this and at least one more program about biological warfare and Lyme disease. In For the Record programs 480 and 585, I have discussed Lyme disease and some indications not only that it is a direct outgrowth of biological warfare research, but there are indications that there are evidentiary tributaries, or perhaps a heritage might be a better way of putting it, going back all the way to Project Paperclip and people like Eric Traub, a Third Reich scientist who was doing biological warfare research for the Third Reich and then was brought to the U.S. under Project Paperclip. He appears to have worked for a time at Plum Island, an animal disease research facility off of Long Island Sound, or in Long Island Sound, and there are indications that some of his experiments with ticks may very well have been involved with what became, or what was labeled, Lyme disease. So we will be taking a look at the development of Lyme disease and biological warfare in the next couple of programs. Now, obviously, I am taking a break, or we are taking a detour from hands-on discussion of the SARS-CoV-2 virus and COVID-19, which I'm convinced is not only biological warfare, but I believe the genesis was not in China or in a Chinese laboratory, and nothing got out accidentally. I believe this is, at one level, a covert operation at another, what I have called a bio-psyop apocalypse now. We will be coming back to that in a couple of weeks. I think that some of the things that we are discussing or will be discussing in these programs about Lyme disease and biological warfare warrant analysis in the context of what we are seeing with COVID-19. In particular, the possibility of genetic engineering, genetic mutation of existing microorganisms, in the case obviously of COVID-19, a bat-borne coronavirus, and or at least a coronavirus that comes from bats. And in the case of Lyme disease, very possibly a number of different organisms, including perhaps something known as a rickettsia, a mysterious rickettsia that is a type of bacterium, which is labeled here Swiss agent or Swiss agent USA. Now, the official causative agent, so to speak, for Lyme disease is a spirochete called Borrelia burgdorferi, named after Willy Burgdorfer, the discoverer, quote-unquote, of the disease, someone we will talk about in this program. But in addition to genetic manipulation, other things to be considered here are cross-vectoring, the production of a disease through infection by multiple organisms. One of the things that Willy Burgdorfer and apparently also other researchers involved with Fort Detrick and U.S. biological warfare research were doing was infecting ticks and other disease-carrying organisms, including fleas and mosquitoes, with multiple infectious agents so that the bite of one of those organisms would basically infect the human being, or I guess it would also apply to animals, with multiple pathologies at the same time, or multiple pathogens at the same time, leading to multiple pathologies. The Another consideration, I should say, that should be weighed here is the possibility or the masking of pathogens and the pathologies that they create in order to hinder or prevent accurate diagnosis and subsequent treatment. The masking of pathogens and the pathologies that they create would make it difficult or impossible for the victim or targeted population to be able to accurately diagnose even the possibility that they have been targeted for biological warfare, and then, of course, what exactly it was that they had. All of these things, genetic manipulation, not necessarily through gene splicing, which we know today because it appears that much of this research was done in the 1950s and 1960s, but genetic manipulation, cross-vectoring, and the masking of pathogens all factor into Lyme disease, and I think that the reflections that we engage in with regard to Lyme disease and biological warfare should be used to measure what is going on with regard to COVID-19. And I've done many programs to date, For the Record programs 1111 through 1132 and 1134 about COVID-19, and there will be many others. I do think that the work we are doing about biological warfare research and Lyme disease is important for weighing against the COVID-19 phenomenon and to enhance our understanding of some of the factors involved with biological warfare. The programs that we are going to be doing will in considerable measure be taking advantage of a very important new book called Bitten. That book is authored by Chris Newby. It's called Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, published in hardcover by HarperCollins and copyrighted 2019 by Chris Newby. This book is a very important one. I want to stress a couple of things. A, I think it is very important for people to get a hold of this book. I think one could do no better than to purchase a copy of it and to share it with others and or encourage them to buy copies of the book as well. I should stress that I get no money whatsoever from this. This is simply an act of civic responsibility, so to speak, but I don't get any money from the programs I do, nor any royalties from Ms. Newby's book. Chris Newby, that's K-R-I-S, last name N-E-W-B-Y, does science writing right down the road at Stanford University. Both she and her husband, Paul, became infected with Lyme disease and another tick-borne disease called babesiosis. I may be mispronouncing that. B-A-B-E-S-I-O-S-I-S. They both suffered mightily with these ailments and struggled to find out what it was that was wrong with them. In the course of doing so, Ms. Newby plunged into the research that was being conducted by the Lyme disease community or the Lyme disease patients community, and not only broke ground or certainly dug much deeper in the research that had been done about Lyme disease and biological warfare, she also revealed some very shocking and very disturbing things about the scientific and medical authorities who were in charge with, quote, curing, unquote, or, quote, treating, unquote, Lyme disease. To say they had conflicts of interest would be something of an understatement. But again, the book Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons by Chris Newby, a very important new book, and I would encourage listeners to this program to buy it and encourage others to do the same. And again, I get no money from this whatsoever. Something of an entree point to our discussion comes from the New York Times of May 28th of 2020, an article by Zoe Schlanger, S-C-H-L-A-N-G-E-R, another distancing challenge for your lockdown walkabouts, ticks, unquote. And this talks about the fact that Lyme disease season was here again because people were going outside and hiking and gardening and so forth. And this would give them the worry of catching Lyme disease in addition to their worries about COVID-19. One of the things that is interesting, I'm going to excerpt the article briefly. Some of the basic symptoms of a Lyme infection, fever, malaise, fatigue, can resemble COVID-19. That is a worry that nobody needs. Well, yes, indeed, it certainly is a worry that no one needs. I also wonder, and this is pure speculation, whether perhaps some of the aspects of Lyme disease, one or more of the organisms that may be involved with it, or some genes or proteins or amino acids from these organisms may have been used in the construction, the manipulation of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And I wonder again about cross-vectoring with regard certainly to COVID-19, and I think it is clear that in the case of Lyme disease, there does appear to be more than one organism and possibly several involved with the disease. Now, we're going to begin our analysis by, as we do so often, going back to events prior to and during and immediately after the Second World War. Willy Burgdorfer, W-I-L-L-Y, last name B-U-R-G-B-O-R-F-E-R, is the scientist who was credited with discovering Borrelia burgdorferi, the spirochete that was involved, that officially causes Lyme disease. He was a Swiss of German extraction. Switzerland has French, German, and Italian segments of its population. And he was from the German segment of that. And his academic mentor was a fellow named Rudolf Geigy, G-E-I-G-Y. I may be mispronouncing that last name. He, in turn, was from a company, or from a family that founded a firm called J.R. Geigy AG. Now, as we will see, that company was part of the Swiss component of the IG Farben Nazi chemical cartel during World War II. The cyber company, and again, I may be mispronouncing that, like so many names, this is one that I have read many times. I have never heard spoken a lot. It is spelled C-I-B-A, and that and the Sandoz company, S-A-N-D-O-Z, and Geigy were three Swiss chemical companies, which at the end of World War I were folded into a cartel, an international monopoly, originally to compete with the German IG Farben. Eventually, when IG Farben was formally coalesced into the cartel with the midwifing of John Foster Dulles of Sullivan and Cromwell, the Swiss cartel of Seibach, Geigy, and Sandoz was folded into IG Farben and became a key element of the Nazi chemical machine. As we will see, in 1942, both the Swiss and American Geigy companies, both the original Geigy company and its American subsidiary, along with Sandoz and Seibach's Swiss and American subsidiaries, were indicted in the U.S. under the Antitrust Act. We'll talk about that in just a minute. With regard to Rudolf Geigy himself, it would appear, as one reads it, and this is not to find fault with Ms. Newby. I think she is perhaps diplomatically oblique, but aware of what went on. It looks like Rudolf Geiger not only may have been a Third Reich intelligence agent associated with IG Farben, which had a powerful espionage subsidiary, the Berlin NW7 office originally and extended around the world. The IG Farben espionage component was very important to Third Reich intelligence, and Switzerland was very important not only to the entire Third Reich financial and industrial superstructure, but to IG Farben in particular. A company called Interhandel, I-N-T-E-R-H-A-N-D-E-L, was the Swiss-based holding company for IG Farben. It appears from an intelligent reading of Rudolf Geiger that he may very well have been working as an intelligence officer, a spook, if you will, during World War II. And certainly, as Ms. Newby notes, it is not clear if he actually was engaging in the espionage activities he wrote about in a thinly fictionalized novel, but he was involved with placing researchers, protégés of his, into institutions which were involved with the United States Biological Warfare Research Program. One of those was Willy Burgdorfer, the man whose activities formed the center of the book Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, and whom we will be discussing at length and in detail in this and probably our next program as well. Beginning with Rudolf Geiger and the Geiger Company, bearing in mind that it is Rudolf Geiger who was Willy Burgdorfer's entree to the Rocky Mountain Laboratory, which was involved with U.S. biological warfare research, and it was Rudolf Geiger who basically was the entree vehicle, to coin a term, for Willy Burgdorfer's entree into the U.S. Biological Warfare Research Program. Of Rudolf Geiger, his family, his firm, and his activities during World War II and afterward, we read from Chris Newby's Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, as follows. Willy's academic advisor, Rudolf Geiger, was born in 1902 to a wealthy, upper-class family that founded what would become J.R. Geiger AG, a chemical company that started as a family business in 1758. The company's Basel headquarters were on the Rhine River in the region where the borders of Switzerland, France, and Germany meet. During World War II, the company was perfectly situated to sell goods to both the Allies and Germany. The original Geiger Company started off as a textile dye manufacturer and then moved into chemicals. During World War II, it produced insecticides and, most notably, the iconic, quote, polar red, unquote, dye that colored the background of Nazi swastika flags. Early in life, Geiger opted for adventure and a jungle helmet over a traditional position in his family's firm. With the help of his family's wealth, he dedicated his life to minimizing the human toll of tropical diseases, many of which were transmitted by arthropods, that include ticks, by the way. To support this mission, he established the Swiss Tropical Institute Field Laboratory in Tanganyika, part of present-day Tanzania, in 1949, and the Centre Suisse de Recherche Scientifique in Côte d'Ivoire, or Ivory Coast, in 1951. Even during the war, World War II, his citizenship in a neutral country enabled him to travel Even during the war, his citizenship in a neutral country enabled him to travel freely. Quote, "The Swiss are above suspicion," said Geiger, who later in his life wrote a thinly fictionalized novella, Siri, S-I-R-I, Top Secret, that describes the spy activities that he observed during his travels. It is not known if Gagi participated in these activities, but he did help place young researchers in institutions that supported the U.S. bioweapons programs. Bear in mind, again, not only was Switzerland fundamentally involved with IG Farben, a very important element of IG Farben, Switzerland was extremely important for the Third Reich's finance and industry as a whole. And bear in mind that Alan Dulles was in the Bern, Switzerland office, and like his brother, John Foster Dulles, who put together the IG Farben cartel, as we have seen, Alan Dulles was heavily involved with Third Reich industry and masking it, masking American investment in it. Before the war, he was involved really on both sides, both the Allied and Axis sides, during World War II. And then after the war, not only helped to shepherd the SS and the Galen spy organization into the U.S. intelligence apparatus, but also was involved with helping to get many of the paperclip scientists into U.S. service as well. By the way, note that eventually after World War II, Seibert, Geige, and Sandoz eventually recoalesced as the Novartis company, the Novartis pharmaceutical company, one of the largest in the world. That basically is the Swiss IG. Also note that Sandoz, S-A-N-D-O-Z, is a company well known to people in the, quote, counterculture, unquote. It was Sandoz whose employee, Mr. Hoffman, Albert Hoffman, quote, discovered, unquote, LSD. He discovered it accidentally in 1938, and then under, frankly, suspicious conditions, he resuscitated his 1938 discovery and took what has become a very well-known first LSD trip, unquote, on his bicycle in 1943. It is unusual to resuscitate or to professionally rehabilitate a chemical discovery that took place many years before. It does happen, but it is unusual in light of the fact that, A, the Third Reich was experimenting on inmates in concentration camps with hallucinogenic agents at this time, and in light of the fact that there is evidence that Albert Hoffman himself collaborated with the CIA's mind control programs in the post-World War II period. I think his 1943 first LSD trip is significant. As we will note here as we discuss the Swiss IG, including Geige, Sandoz, and Seba, at the time that Albert Hoffman took his famous first LSD trip, Sandoz, both the Swiss Sandoz and its American subsidiary, were under indictment in the U.S. by the U.S. Attorney General for being part of a cartel agreement, an international trust agreement to limit the production of essential war materials in the U.S. Around the turn of this century, there was an investigation in Switzerland by a group called ICE. That is not the American governmental agency involved with immigration, but the Independent Commission of Experts that investigated Switzerland's involvement with Third Reich industry, and they came up with some very telling findings about the Swiss chemical industry's involvement with the Nazis, including Geige, the firm for whom Rudolf Geige worked. And as Ms. Newby diplomatically says, it is not known if Geige participated in these spy activities, but he did help place young researchers in institutions that supported the U.S. bioweapons programs. From Haaretz of 9/11/2001, a significant date that, by Eliehu Salpeter, S-A-L-P-E-T-E-R, Hitler's industrious silent helpers, skipping down, speaking of the Independent Commission of Experts' findings and their report, the chapters on Switzerland's chemical industry are the most embarrassing section of the Commission's report. It is now clear that the directors of Swiss companies in Basel were very well aware of what was going on at the time in Germany and had knowledge of the record, It is now clear that the directors of Swiss companies in Basel were very well aware of what was going on at the time in Germany and had knowledge of the coerced employment of forced laborers in their branch plants in Germany, as well as of the fact that forced laborers died as a result of the conditions in which they were held. More about the Independent Commission of Experts report, this from swissinfo.ch of August 30th of 2001. Chemical firms exploited Nazi links, probe found. Speaking of this, it found that Cybus Berlin branch in 1933 fired its Jewish board of directors and supervisory board members and replaced them with, quote, Aryan, unquote, Germans. At the same time, the report said, Sandoz replaced the Jewish chairman of its German subsidiary with an Aryan, unquote, businessman. The findings are part of 8 studies released this week by the Independent Commission of Experts, which says several leading Swiss chemical firms, including J.R. Geige, Cybus Sandoz, and Hoffmann La Roche, put their own interests ahead of humanitarian concerns in their dealing with the Nazis. The ICE concluded that the chemical firm's bosses in Switzerland, quote, possessed a high level of detailed knowledge about the political and economic situation in Nazi Germany and incorporated their knowledge into their economic planning and used it as a basis for decision-making. All the companies concerned owned factories in Germany between 1933 and 1945, as well as in wartime-occupied Poland, and were important suppliers of chemicals, dyes, and pharmaceuticals for the Third Reich. The ICE also found the firms had extensive contacts among the Nazis. Quote, Geige, that's the firm for whom Rudolf Geige, or with which the Geige family was affiliated, and it was Rudolf Geige who shepherded Willy Burgdorfer into the U.S. biological warfare program. Geige maintained particularly good relations with Klaus Ungewitter, the Reich Commissioner for Chemicals. That's U-N-G-E-W-I-T-T-E-R. So this, again, is the background against which, or part of the background against which the entree of Willy Burgdorfer into the U.S. biological warfare program must be seen. On the SpitfireList.com website, I have a number of old anti-fascist books available for download for free. One of those from 1947 is Treason's Peace, German Lies and American Dupes by Howard Watson Ambruster, published in hardcover by the Beechhurst Press. And in there, there is discussion of the indictment of IG Farben and its many subsidiaries in the U.S. and around the world for deliberately restricting essential wartime production in the U.S. Reading now from Treason's Peace. Another indictment accusing General Amelin and General, that was the American subsidiary of IG Farben, another indictment accusing General Amelin and General Dystoff of conspiracy in the dye industry was filed in the New Jersey District Court of May 14, 1942, but in this instance, Farben, local address still unknown, was named only as a co-conspirator. Those indicted included DuPont, Allied Chemical and Dye, and American Cyanamid, also Farben affiliates, the American Cyber, Sandoz, and Geige. Skipping down, the alleged conspiracy included worldwide restrictions in the manufacture, distribution, import, and export of dyestuffs stemming out of the international cartel set up in 1928, in which co-conspirator Farben was the dominant influence. A long list of other co-conspirators included the Swiss Cyber, Sandoz, and Geigy companies, with Cincinnati Chemical Works, their jointly owned American concern, Imperial Chemical Industries of Britain and its Canadian subsidiary, the French Kuhlmann, Japan's Mitsui, and DuPont ICI branches in Brazil and the Argentine. And note, eventually, after the war, when Tom Clark, Ramsey Clark's father, became Attorney General, he basically pulled the rug out from under this lawsuit, this indictment, I should say. When Secretary of War Stinson and Attorney General Biddle agreed to postpone the trial until it would not interfere with war production, one Justice Department official was quoted as saying sourly, quote, "First, they hurt the war effort by their restrictive practices, and then, if caught, they used the war effort as an excuse to avoid prosecution." In April of 1946, after Tom Clark had become Attorney General, the indictments were completely dismissed as to 11 of the defendants, including General Weisdorf's celebrated Ernest Halbach, and were partially dismissed as to 4 of the corporations and 8 of the other individuals named. At the same time, pleas of nolo condendere, which is equivalent to guilty, were entered, and the Justice Department notified the court that under these circumstances, it would not be in the public interest to stage a trial. No decree was entered by the court, so the contracts were not officially abrogated. In many programs, including the original Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast, a rehabilitation of that, or recapping of that in For the Record 511, and many of the programs we have done, as well as many of the books available for download on the Spitfire website, we have spoken about the cover-up of the massive, decisive collaboration between U.S. finance and industry and the Third Reich. That, again, is the foundation for and the background against which Willy Burgdorfer's involvement with the U.S. Biological Warfare Program should be evaluated. And, again, I think the possibility of Rudolf Geigy not only being a Swiss intelligence officer for the IG Farben espionage infrastructure, but also very possibly collaborating with Alan Dulles and or others with regard to recruiting researchers for the U.S. Biological Warfare Program should be very carefully considered. Now, in the book Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, there is extensive discussion of genetic manipulation and its role in the U.S. Biological Warfare Program. In 1966, a Nobel Prize winner named Joshua Lederberg published an editorial, or actually was quoted in an editorial in the Washington Post as to warning about the possibility of genetically engineered microbes causing a future, what he called a black death. And he argued, along with other experts, for the banning of biological warfare. But note here that there were warnings in the 1960s that the genetic manipulation of microorganisms could lead to a new black death. From Bitten by Chris Newby, one of the most vocal critics was Joshua Lederberg, L-E-D-E-R-B-E-R-G, Ph.D., a 1958 Nobel Prize recipient for his pioneering work on bacterial genetics while at the University of Wisconsin. After he moved to Stanford, Lederberg began early research on gene splicing and started to understand the responsibilities that can come with creating new life forms. This concern motivated him to start lobbying policymakers to draft a ban on biological weapons. The large-scale deployment of infectious agents is a potential threat against the whole species. Mutant forms of viruses could well develop that would spread over the Earth's population for a new Black Death, unquote, said Weberberg in a Washington Post editorial on September 24, 1966. He added, quote, the future of our species is very much bound up with the control of these weapons. Their use must be regulated by the most thoughtful reconsideration of U.S. and world policy, unquote. And note that the Fort Detrick biological warfare researchers basically dissed this study. And I'll read what Ms. Newby writes. A month later, the Army's Biological Subcommittee Munitions Advisory Group thumbed its nose at this, quote, national pronouncement made by prominent scientists, unquote. Downplaying the scientists' concerns, Fort Detrick's scientific director, Riley Housewright, H-O-U-S-E-W-R-I-G-H-T, said that, quote, such publicity would probably best be considered to be an annoyance, unquote. The advisory group then continued discussing its plans for genetic manipulation of microbes, new rickettsial and viral agents, and the development of a balanced program for both incapacitating and lethal agents. Note that they continued their plans for genetic manipulation. And those plans continued. From Bitten. An interview with Fort Detrick's Director of Biological Research, Dr. J. R. Goodlow, G-O-O-D-L-O-W, on February 16, 1962, however, suggests one possible research agenda. Research on new agents has tended to concentrate on viral and rickettsial diseases, with major effort directed at increased first-hand knowledge of these so-called ARBO, or arthropod-borne viruses. Ticks, by the way, are arthropods. And Rocky Mountain spotted fever is a rickettsial-borne disease, continuing with Chris Newby's account. The United States had also begun basic research on the genetic manipulation of microorganisms. In that same report, Goodlow added, quote, studies of bacterial genetics are also in progress with the aim of transferring genetic determinants from one type of organism to another, unquote. The goal of these experiments was to make biological agents more virulent and resistant to antibiotics. And as we will see, Willy Bergdorfer himself, working at the Rocky Mountain Laboratory, was heavily involved with genetic manipulation of microbes and was involved with a number of different technologies here. And we should also note that, reading from Bitten, advances in microbial genetics have opened up the potential of manipulating viruses and rickettsias to create more powerful weapons, both lethal and incapacitating. The perfect incapacitating agent was one that made a large percentage of the population moderately ill for weeks to months. The illness it caused would have to be hard to diagnose and treat, and under the best circumstances, the targeted population shouldn't even be aware that they had been dosed with a bioweapon. This would make it easier for vaccinated invading soldiers to take over cities and industrial infrastructure without much of a fight or the destruction of property. Bioweapons researchers such as Willy Bergdorfer knew that infecting large populations would require exposing people to agents for which they had no natural immunity. And to do this, researchers would have to import and or invent new microbes. They were, in essence, playing God, creating, quote, bacteriological freaks or mutants, unquote, by using chemicals, radiation, ultraviolet light, and other agents, wrote modern investigative journalism pioneer Jack Anderson in a Washington Post column on August 27, 1965. Vili had already been conducting a trial-and-error style of genetic manipulation in the same way that a corn farmer or a hog grower selectively breeds strains that result in desired outcomes. He was growing microbes inside pigs, having the pigs feed on animals, and then harvesting the microbes from the animals that exhibited the level of illness that the military had requested. He was also simultaneously mixing bacteria and viruses inside ticks, leveraging the virus's innate ability to manipulate bacterial genes in order to reproduce and thus accelerating the rate of mutations and desirable new bacterial traits. In 1966, Fort Detrick's Biological Subcommittee Munitions Advisory Group put this emerging research area at the top of its priorities, describing it as, quote, research in microbiogenetics concerned with aspects of transformation, transduction, and recombination. Again, noting this is sort of a, not only genetic manipulation, but sort of a cross-vectoring by putting multiple organisms in the same tick, or as we'll see, fleas or mosquitoes. Reading again the same passage. Vili was also simultaneously mixing bacteria and viruses inside ticks, leveraging the virus's innate ability to manipulate bacterial genes in order to reproduce and thus accelerating the rate of mutations and desirable new bacterial traits. In 1966, Fort Detrick's Biological Subcommittee Munitions Advisory Group put this emerging research area at the top of its priorities, describing it as, quote, research in microbiogenetics concerned with aspects of transformation, transduction, and recombination, unquote. Now, an independent filmmaker named Tim Gray filmed Vili for a documentary, and Chris Newby was reports about the questions that he asked here. And this was, again, Tim Gray, that's spelled G-R-E-Y, and he interviewed Vili Bergdorfer on film. And while being interviewed, Tim Gray, whose sister had died from Lyme disease complications, basically braced Vili Bergdorfer about whether his research had produced a biological weapon, whether basically Lyme disease was a biological weapon. Well, you'll hear what Vili had to say. From Bitten, The Secret History of Lyme Disease and Biological Weapons, Tim Gray says, quote, let's take your scientific work, studies that I had discovered that were published in 1952 and 1956, Gray said. Quote, one being the intentional infecting of ticks, the second being the recombination of four different pathogens, two being spirochetal and two being viral. From a simple procedural standpoint, I think it is safe to assume that the purpose of these studies at the height of the Cold War on the heels of World War II was to ensure that we were able to keep up with the rest of the world from a biological warfare standpoint. Did you question that, unquote? Vili paused and then replied, quote, question. Does Borrelia burgdorferi, that is the organism he, quote, discovered, unquote, that causes Lyme disease, or one of them, as we will see. Question. Does Borrelia burgdorferi have the potential for biological warfare, unquote? As tears welled up in Vili's eyes, he continued, quote, looking at the data, it already has. If the organism stays within the system, you won't even recognize what it is. in your lifespan, it can explode. We evaluate it. You never deal with that. As a scientist, you can sleep better, unquote. Later in the video, Gray circled back to this topic and asked, quote, if there is an emergence of a brand new epidemic that has the tenets of all of those things that you put together, do you feel responsible for that? Unquote. And Bibby replies, quote, yeah. It sounds like throughout the 38 years I may have the lab director telephone me, this is Director So-and-so. I've got somebody here from the FBI. Will you come down and we will ask a few questions, unquote. Exactly the same thing. I recall all these discussions, Willie said. Finally, after 3 hours and 14 minutes, Gray asked him the one question, the only question he really cared about. Quote, was the pathogen that you found in the tick that Lyme disease outbreak investigator Alan Steer gave you the same pathogen or similar or a generational mutation of the one you published in the paper from 1952, ? In response, Willie crossed his arms defensively, took a deep breath, and stared into the camera for 43 seconds, an eternity. Then he looked away, down and to the right. He appeared to be working through an internal debate. The left side of his mouth briefly curled up as if he is thinking, oh, well, unquote. Then anger flashes across his face. Ja, he said, more in German than English. It was a stunning admission from one of the world's foremost authorities on Lyme disease. If it was true, it meant that Willie had left out essential data from his scientific articles on the Lyme disease outbreak, and that as the disease spread like a wildfire in the Northeast and Great Lakes regions of the U.S., he was part of the cover-up of the truth. He seemed to be saying that Lyme wasn't a naturally occurring germ, one that may have gotten loose and been spread by global warming and explosion of deer and other environmental changes. It had been created in a military bioweapons lab for the specific purpose of harming human beings. And then Chris Newby interviewed Vidya Bergdorfer herself and spoke about a naval research unit in Cairo that was involved with infecting, basically loading up fleas with plague, something the Nazis were doing, according to Vili. And then talks about the development of something called Colorado tick fever virus, which was a biological warfare weapon that appears to mask the antigen. Basically, it masks infection by other organisms at the same time. From Bitten. I shifted to discussing the research Vili had supervised at the Naval Medical Research Unit 3 called NAMRU 3 in Cairo, Egypt, a facility that worked on tick and bioweapons-related research. Quote, I was doing things that the Nazis used to be doing, Vili said. What kind of stuff? Unquote. Quote, working on the suspension for fleas, determining how many of the quantity of the genetic material in fleas can be used, unquote. Vili paused, unable to find the words to finish. Quote, so you were putting plague in fleas then? Unquote. Yeah, unquote. What else were you doing, I asked. Colorado tick fever virus, a mild disease. They found it produces mild infection, unquote. If the Colorado tick fever virus was being developed as a bioweapon, it could not have been harmless. Its initial symptoms included fever, chills, headache, pain behind the eyes, light sensitivity, muscle pain, generalized malaise, abdominal pain, hepatosplenomegaly, swollen liver and spleen, nausea and vomiting, and a flag or pimply rash. Complications could include meningitis, encephalitis, and hemorrhagic fever, but these were rare. Still, it didn't sound mild to me. I then asked him what the goal of these tests was. Billy replied, "The virus lowers the antigen," unquote. Antigens are molecules on the outer surface of an invading microbe that the body recognizes as foreign, providing a signal that an invasion is underway. Theoretically, if a virulent bacteria's genetic code will mix with a virus that causes a mild infection, or if both microbes were loaded into a single tick, physicians would not recognize the physical symptoms of this novel infection, and it might not show up on standard antibody-based screening tests. I checked with Vili to see if my theory was correct. "The virus lowers the antigen, so you can't test for it," unquote. "That is it," he said. "So you are saying if you infected an enemy population, they wouldn't be able to figure out what was wrong?" "Yeah," unquote. Again, as Ms. Newby says, "Theoretically, if a virulent bacteria's genetic code were mixed with a virus that causes a mild infection, or if both microbes were loaded into a single tick, physicians wouldn't recognize the physical symptoms of this novel infection, and it might not show up on standard antibody-based screening tests." And note that the masking of biological agents was a major focal point of U.S. biological warfare research. Ms. Newby describes something related by Bill Patrick or William Patrick. He was Stephen Hatfield's mentor. They were described as a Batman and Robin team in the article about Message in the Anthrax from Vanity Fair of September of 2003. And it was Bill Patrick who oversaw the tests on the New York City subway in 1965. Bill Patrick went on to say that if a lethal, non-contagious bioweapon had been needed, the U.S. first choice would have been a mixture of tularemia with SEB toxin deployed in a small, dry particle. This mixture, delivered in massive or overwhelming doses, would shrink the incubation time for both agents and create an inflammatory storm within the body, one that would kill those at the center of the delivery within 18 hours. He stressed that such a combination weapon would not manifest as an immediately recognizable disease. Then Chris Newby goes into discussion of something called the Swiss agent. Now, this is a type of microorganism called a rickettsia. It is similar to the rickettsia called Rickettsia rickettsii that causes Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And as we will see, and we will begin the discussion of the Swiss agent in this program, and we'll continue it in our next broadcast, it certainly appears not only that the Swiss agent, this mystery rickettsia, was involved with Lyme disease, but that there was an active cover-up of this. This may be an example of cross-vectoring. From Bitten: "I will engage the scientific part of Vili's brain in answering my two questions. First, why the Lyme disease discovery files were missing from the National Archives, and why images of the organism labeled Swiss agent," unquote, "were located in the archive folders in the time frame where one would expect the Lyme spirochete pictures to be. Could this mysterious Swiss agent, which was never mentioned in any publications associated with the Lyme outbreak, also be a biological weapon?" After a few warm-up questions, I started asking specifics about the ticks and the patient blood samples collected around the time of the discovery. He told me that in late 1979, he had quote, over 100 ticks, unquote, from Shelter Island, located about 20 miles from the Lyme outbreak, and all but two have an unidentified rickettsial species inside. It looked like Rickettsia montana, now called Rickettsia montanensis, under a microscope, a non-disease-causing cousin of the deadly Rickettsia rickettsii that causes Rocky Mountain spotted fever, but it was a different species. He said that a similar Rickettsia had also been found in the Lone Star ticks, and that there was quite a bit of excitement, unquote, over that discovery. I kept asking Willie about the mystery Rickettsia, but his answers were garbled, and all I could glean from him was that he stopped investigating it for reasons unknown. "You say you're not looking for it anymore?" I asked. "They probably paid people off," he said. "There are folks up there who have a way to enable that," unquote. Next, I showed Willie an unlabeled image of a microbe and asked him what it was. "That is a Swiss agent," said Willie. I asked him a series of questions on this microbe, and he recited what seemed like well-rehearsed lines. "The Swiss agent is a Rickettsia montana-like organism found in the European ship peak Ixodes ricinus, and it doesn't cause disease in humans." Then I asked him why he brought samples of it from Switzerland back to his lab. He replied with the response that he often used when he seemed to know the answer, but wasn't going to divulge it to me. Quote, question mark, unquote. And then later, for 2 days we dug through boxes of Willie's lab notebook slides, research report, and a tattered brown file folder labeled Dietrich, 1954 to 1956. The folder was stuffed with faded carbon copies of letters documenting Willie's bioweapons work, infecting fleas, mosquitoes, and ticks with lethal agents. There were reports on his plague-laden flea experiments, and they confirmed what Willie had told me in our last 2013 interview. Letters and reports detailed his efforts to infect mosquitoes and to deliver lethal doses of the Trinidad agent, a deadly strain of yellow fever virus extracted from the liver of a deceased person. Lindorf had also found some deposit slips from two different Swiss bank accounts tucked into a stack of unrelated documents. The real smoking gun, though, was Willie's handwritten lab notes on the patient blood tests from the disease outbreak in Connecticut. These tests showed the proof of presence of what I named Swiss Agent USA, the mystery rickettsia present in most of the patients from the original Lyme outbreak, a fact that was never disclosed in journal articles. It didn't take a PhD in microbiology to see that almost all the patient blood had reacted strongly to an antigen test for a European rickettsia that Willie had called the Swiss agent. Even more surprising, all this work was done in 1978, about 2 years before Willie, the lead author, published the article reporting that a spirochete was the only cause of Lyme disease. And we'll recap what we've been talking about here with the Swiss agent and then continue with discussion of how that mysteriously dropped out of the literature right about the time that Willie got engaged in a conversation with biological warfare researchers. However, that will be in our next program. This concludes For the Record program number 1135, Lyme Disease and Biological Warfare, Part 1, being recorded on June 22nd of the year 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.